look at that.
The older you get,
oh, I'm having fun. Oh.
The more likely you are to be alone.
I felt like a prisoner in my own home.
But research shows young people,
the quality of connections isn't always what it used to be,
are more likely to feel isolated.
People are very hungry for, like, a real human connection.
This week on Open Record,
a constant human connection.
A deadly epidemic that spreads when no one is around. From the Fox 6 Studios, this is Open Record. I'm your host, Brian Polson, and I'm joined as always by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
And we are joined by someone who is long overdue for her maiden voyage in Open Record. It is Fox 6's Ashley. I stumbled over the introduction. I finally have you on again, too. Fox 6's Ashley Sears. Welcome to Open Record, Ashley.
Thanks for having me.
We are recording this episode on Wednesday, December 13th, for release on Thursday, December 14th. And we're smack in the middle of Hanukkah. We're less than 2 weeks away from Christmas and even Kwanzaa. It's the time of year for work parties and social gatherings and family gatherings, being surrounded by the people we know and love. It can also be one of the most isolating times of the year. And Ashley, that's the topic you tackled in this week's story. As we're recording it, it'll be airing tonight. When this comes out, it will have just aired on Fox 6 News. How and why did you begin even looking into the issue of loneliness?
I was all alone at home while my husband was anchoring. And what do? I watch Netflix, right? And I watched a series about the blue zones. And there's areas where there's high concentrations of centenarians. So people that live to be 100 or more, right?
And like around the world?
Around the world. Okay. There's, certain areas in Greece, Japan, Italy. And part of it is diet and exercise. But there was a huge element that was dealing with togetherness and not feeling isolated and being a part of a tribe. And it just kind of got me interested. And I started Googling around and I came to find out loneliness was declared an epidemic in the U.S. by the U.S. Surgeon General.
I remember when Ashley called me and we were talking through some story ideas and she goes, and then I have this story. I've been watching this Netflix series and I've never did a little, okay. But then she started talking about it and was like so passionate. I'm like, yeah, that's, and when she had called, I knew the timing kind of the shoots and stuff like that. I'm like, that'll be perfect. We can have it ready in time for kind of this holiday season where all those feelings are amplified by so much.
Well, and when you were just giving the backstory to this, it was interesting because you started with,
yeah,
Ben was at work and I was home alone. Mm-hmm. And I was going to stop and say, do we have to talk to Ben for a minute? Loneliness. And he's like, I got to do a story about this. But I did think about the fact that, as a new mom, and you're not a new mom anymore, but when you first were, I've got to think for new moms, especially, it changes your social circles. It changes your priorities and what you have to do every day. And while you, I'm sure, love being home with that little one, it can in many ways disconnect you from a lot of your other social circles that you've had for years, right?
Yeah. I mean, I still feel like a new mom. Like, she's three, you know? Yeah. But I do think a lot of that is, you know, she was born in the pandemic. And yeah, a lot of times, I mean, you could speak to this as a new mom. You know, when right, you were a new mom, you had maybe friends and family who could come visit you, mm-hmm, see you at the hospital, which I was kind of happy no one right could come to the
yeah,
hospital.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it's, you're totally disconnected in a different way than I think other people were, which maybe was a little bit scary for me. And I'll admit it, like, I felt totally lonely and isolated in that time because even when people came to visit, you're like, I'm scared of you, you know,
yeah,
like, put a mask on. We're not spending that same quality time together. So, yeah, I mean, that's an element of it.
So that was the story idea. But how did you, what was your approach? How did you say, okay, well, how am I going to research and then go tell this story?
Mm-hmm. So I first started, I was like, okay, who is this impacting? And the whole thing with the blue zones was, this is centenarians. These are older individuals. So I was like, okay, let's go to an assisted living, facility or assisted living place. And Sarah suggested go to the lakefront and try and get MOS and talk to people about being lonely. And, you know, whenever anyone says like, go get MOS, you know, man on the street interviews,
yeah, right,
I'm like, oh, no one's going to open up to me about this feeling of loneliness. So I just kind of pushed that off. I set up the interviews at St. Camillus in Wauwatosa. And but first I was able to do an interview with a woman at Rogers, a therapist at Rogers. And she was explaining that, you know, this isn't really an epidemic that's impacting elderly people the most. This is really impacting young people. And I was like, okay, I need that element to the story. And it just so happened the day I was supposed to go to the assisted living place, they canceled on me. Just, they were like, something came up, we have to cancel. And I was like, okay, I'm going to spend this time trying to get an interview with young people. And I had interviewed this man, David Wacker, a while ago about an organization he started, or a group he started, to, you know, have young people make friends. It's called Good Peeps. So that's kind of how this all came about.
So you went in, what's interesting to me is you went in with the presumption that, well, older people are more likely to be alone and therefore suffer from loneliness. It seems like what you found was really surprising.
Oh, absolutely. But it makes sense. You know, when I was interviewing the woman, she said, you know, it was impacting, while older people are alone more, it's impacting young people almost double, I believe is what she said, which was like, what? But you're like, you have social media, you don't have this connection that you once had, maybe. You know, on how many times on Facebook are you like, yeah, I'm friends with so-and-so, but what do they do for a living? Or when's the last time you talked to them on the phone?
What do you really know about them? You know, yeah. I know what they said about Beyonce. I don't know anything about their lives.
Yeah.
Just to echo all these points of like, you know, it makes sense that older people, as their partners die or their friends pass away, that makes sense. New moms, new parents tend to feel isolated just by their environment. And now there's this next generation that you would think, oh, they're socializing and they're young and they're fun and they're going out and stuff like that. But this other feeling of being disconnected with people, I mean, the pandemic clearly played a role in that too. But like, what else? I mean, I know you talked about social media, but what other things, like, why aren't young people going out and being social?
I know I was reading some stuff about, you know, just digital media in general. We're glued to our TVs, to our phones, to the internet, to playing video games. And you don't have that go outside and play with your friends type element as a child that you might have. Yeah. And then that kind of builds up. And I know there was a lot said during the pandemic, it was kind of amplified. And then you get outside of the pandemic, but you don't really know how to
reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I found you referenced in your story, well, first of all, the Surgeon General calling this an epidemic. This isn't just sort of a thing to talk about. There's really science behind this. They've measured this. But one of the things that stood out to me from that Surgeon General's report where they called this an epidemic was the very idea that we call social media, we call them social networks. You build these social networks. And yet the thing that young people are most reporting is that they don't have big social networks. That the number of people, the percentage of young people who have three or fewer close friends has skyrocketed in recent years. And you think they might have a lot of Facebook friends or Instagram, you know, people they're sharing things with, or whatever social media, TikTok, whatever it might be. I probably named the three things people go, he's an old man. I'm sure there's a lot of others, but they have connections there, but they're not strong connections, right?
Yeah. And I think there's also this pressure to come across as happy on social media and put up a front that, you know, my life is amazing. I need followers. I need likes. And there's also the pressure to keep adding to that and to get more likes and to get more follows. And you get so caught up in that you're not focused on, you know, real human interaction.
I was thinking one of the statistics that you mentioned in your story really stood out to me. This, I think, drove the point home that this is more than just a theoretical topic, that this is a real public health concern. Mm-hmm. The Surgeon General's report said that this is as deadly as smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Yeah, and exacerbating health conditions like heart disease, stroke, dementia. It really weighs on you. And I mean, it makes sense, you know, like if you're stressing your body in this way and you have this feeling of isolation and sadness, of course, that's going to lead to other health issues.
So I printed out the one sheet from this 82 page, you know, U.S. Surgeon General report. But everything is down. Companionship from 2003, decrease 14 hours a month. Social engagement, a decrease of 10 hours. Non-household family social engagement. So everything is down. And you know, in the two groups that you talked with in your story, it's almost kind of like it's a great feeling because it's almost the opposite. So like, what are the people at the home that you went to, the assisted living, and then that group that you went to that are getting together every week?
Yeah. So at St. Camillus, they it's assisted living. They have like classes you could go to. And a lot of people, it's so Wisconsin said, what I look forward to the most is the happy hour that we have of here, course. You know, the socializing. And I spoke to some like Rosemary in my story. She said, not only is she doing these cooking classes, but she did like a woodworking class. So she's meeting a bunch of different people. And she said she really feels a connection to them. With the younger people, it shows maybe how digital, you know, media, social media is connecting people. That started as a meetup group, like online. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they said, we're going to meet and play volleyball. That's kind of how that started. And they meet twice a week and they do something twice a week. I mean, like, that's commitment, you know, and they look forward to it.
Well, and I think, too, it's one thing, and I can speak to this because I do this, but like, I'll make a dinner date with my girlfriends and I put it on the calendar and I'm like, this all sounds great. And then the day's coming and I'm like, ugh, I really want to go. I'm not really feeling it, but I go. And then I get home and I'm like, man, that was great. So that almost has to be maybe what some of these younger people are feeling of, I know I need to get out. I know I need to go play volleyball because I committed to it. But then when they get there, they're like, this was a great idea, which then forces you into some of these more social interactions.
Yeah, it's really stepping outside your comfort zone, which, I mean, I'm not good at that at all. Mm-hmm. And it might be crazy that I'm in a profession where you kind of have to be an extrovert. I do not like social situations where I'm not, you know, I don't know people. I get shy, and I'm so thankful that I have a husband who's like over the top.
He is an extrovert.
He can take care of that, you know? So, I mean, I give, and a lot of the people in this group aren't extroverts, and they admit that. They're like totally stepping outside of their comfort zone to meet people. But some of them maybe moved here from a different state or, you know, just didn't have a lot of friends. And they're like, this is something I need. And this is something I yearn for. So they went ahead and did this.
I was thinking about, like, in your story, one of the examples you have visually is these people getting together. The young people are fencing.
Yeah.
And I never would have thought of that as like a social activity that you're gonna go out and learn fencing. But whatever the activity, because what I'm imagining is a lot of people hear this and maybe they are a person who feels isolated and doesn't have a lot of connection. They go, where do I begin? Well, I don't play volleyball. I'm not athletic. What can I do that is something that I'm capable of? And it sounds like what I'm hearing anyway, and you tell me from what you learned in your reporting, is it just find an activity, learn something, but something where you're going to meet new people. Like you said, stepping outside of your comfort zone. Maybe you're not a volleyball player, but it doesn't hurt to go try to learn how the game works.
Yeah. And a lot of the people said they weren't athletic or they weren't volleyball players, but it was just something fun to do. And they're like, we're not good at it. Some people are really good at it. And it's not all like athletics that they're doing either. You know, they are meeting up, having drinks and, you know, doing dinner and stuff like that. But if you're interested in books, you know, join a book club which, you know, it's easier said than done.
Yeah. I will say too, just thinking about some of those things, your local rec departments, I think are a great place to start. If you're looking for something where you're like, I don't know what I like, a lot of rec departments, they have sessions in spring and in fall, and there's always something to do. And you're right, it's going to take stepping outside of your comfort zone to go, all right, I'll sign up for this how to plant a garden class, but maybe you'll meet someone and, you know, more friends or whatever.
Big picture, I was reading through that Surgeon General's report. And you think we can all as individuals do things to try to connect ourselves to others more. When I really think about the fact that older people, the elderly that we talked about here, are more likely to physically be alone. And yet it's the young people who are twice as likely, or they're more likely to be alone. The young people are twice as likely to feel alone. It means that being around people doesn't necessarily solve the problem.
Yeah.
But getting connected, finding that social connection matters. I do step back and go, okay, is there a role for society? Is there a role for government? Is there a policy role here? Something that can be done. And that report talked about things like having more parks, more libraries, playgrounds, you know, and then other things like paid family leave so that, you know, people can take care of family when needed and then maybe get back to the social things that help them feel connected. I thought this was really fascinating. One of the things they said was have doctors actually simply assess patients for loneliness. I know that, and you guys have probably experienced this, you go to the doctor now for maybe an annual physical, they don't ask about loneliness. They do ask about questions about depression.
Yeah.
They're just assessing. Mm-hmm. We know we're going to get these people in. Let's ask. Let's try to get this early on. If they start asking about loneliness, maybe you can catch some of these things before it progresses to increased risks of heart disease and other things, right?
Yeah. And it's also like taking away the stigma of it. Because how many times are you at the doctor and like, are you depressed? And you're like, no, and I'm so happy, you know? So it's finding those solutions. And that's one of the things in the report. It was like, this isn't just talk. This is an emergency situation in our country. And we really need to take steps to making changes.
And putting dollars toward those things, yes. Which is always where the devil meets the details, right? Because where do those dollars go and what's the most effective? But first, you have to identify the problem. And that's what this was all about, right? It's just identifying this is a real problem.
Yeah. And, you know, it's another thing, like, easier said than done. But, I mean, it takes kind of like everyone in this situation to make these sort of changes.
And that's a good time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun and answer a question for which we have not prepared. But, of course, Sarah Smith is prepared because she came up with the question. So what do you have for us today, Sarah?
Are you scared, Ashley?
I'm really scared, yeah.
No, I picked one that I go, ooh, Ash is going to have a thought about this. Okay, so people feel very passionately about different songs during the holidays. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about the best Christmas songs and the worst Christmas songs. Ooh. Now, worst is like your opinion, clearly, but like there are songs that if
like,
I
are we
hear
talking
them,
about ones that grate on you or ones that are controversial, like the
no,
whole
no,
baby
no, no,
it's cold outside
No,
thing.
Like grate on you. Like when okay. I hear this song, I will flip the channel. So I don't know if anyone needs to think about it. I'll tell you that the song that I loathe is Little Drummer Boy. That's I don't want to hear any more pa-rum-pa-pum-pums. It's so dumb.
Sorry. They just sang that.
I don't want
kids. The kids just sang that at church on Sunday. So
I don't know what it is about it. I don't know why I don't like it. But every time it's on, the kids are like, "Mom, it's your least favorite click."
Mine it's 12 Days of Christmas.
12 Days of Christmas. Oh, yeah.
It's the worst.
Yeah. I'm going to take worst. That one step further. What I actually hate more than the 12 Days of Christmas is when people turn the 12 Days of Christmas into some sort of new creation, especially to sell something.
Yeah.
Like a twist on the 12 Days of Christmas because they're so clever. You're not clever. Stop. I hate it.
Is it the length of the song? Is it like all the things?
It's the repetition.
It's all the things. Yeah. It's like, this is so stupid. I don't care. Why are you giving these birds? So many birds.
So many birds. Yes.
Who wants? Let's go back to that. Let's go back to that for a minute. What kind of gift really is a lot of birds? Because now you need, you know, the cleanup and the cages and the food and the whatever. It's a
in this
bird.
Economy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like giving someone, like if you bought them a cell phone. And now you need to have the monthly subscription
the plan
and the
data.
But that's not a gift.
What if they already have a bird sanctuary in their house?
Well, then give them the
Brett
bird.
Brett LeMoyne might like
that. That's true. Yeah. You're not wrong.
All right. Okay, let's imagine they have a bird sanctuary. What do they need all the dancing ladies for?
Yeah.
What's that all about? I mean, and where are you keeping those?
Dancing ladies aren't birds.
No, I'm saying you have a bird sanctuary.
If you have a bird sanctuary, fine.
You can take the calling bird. Okay. And the three French hens. And
I don't know. If you have a lot of birds, do they need to be entertained? Because you can't hang out with them the whole time.
And my question is, do the lords just constantly leap? Like, do they ever stop?
Quads like that.
I don't know.
My kids do. Okay, so I also don't really care for that song. But my kids, when they get to the five golden, I mean, every time. And so it's like, obviously, very many times that they sing that. So
I'll tell you the one that I can't stand because it's played so incessantly on the radio. And it's not what you think. Everyone thinks Mariah Carey. That's fine. Oh, I don't,
that's my favorite song. Okay, I blast it.
I'll listen to every version of that song.
Me too. I love it so much. I can't get
that's
enough.
That's not the one. The one for me is the, I can't think of it now. What it's the... I blocked it out of my head.
Okay, I got another one while you think of it.
Is it Wham? Is it
Last Christmas.
Last Christmas.
I love it.
I like that song.
I love it.
No. I'm telling you, one year, that play, we had a little a Sonos in our kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
And that song came on, I'm telling you, every fourth song. It was like, it became like elevator music.
My second one, I don't know what the song's called, but it's the Hawaiian one. The Melekalikimaka.
You don't like that.
I don't like it. It's catchy, but I don't like it because it makes me think of when I worked at Chuck E. Cheese when I was they had the Chuck E. Cheese version.
I have a second one. It's Feliz Navidad.
Okay.
I don't know why. I have to turn it. I'm like, but Ben, he hates the sad ones. Like, do you know it's Christmas? Feed the children one.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, oh, this is awful. Because it's like all these different voices. And turns out, I'm like, I love it. Yeah. The sadder the Christmas song or the more like religious. For some reason, I'm like crying in my car.
Oh, give me
like,
a good
silent night.
Give me a good Mary, did you know?
Yeah. Like, I didn't know.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
We.
But is Hallelujah a Christmas song, though?
No.
I don't think it is.
No.
But it plays on Christmas stations. I just don't know.
They talk about being born. Well, just being born, don't they?
It's kind of like...
I don't think
it's like a...
My kids are singing it at the concert tomorrow.
Oh, really? I don't know if it's a children's song. If you like look at the lyrics,
there are many.
Okay, but I mean, they're not singing Baby, It's Cold Outside. Christmas song, but no one's questioning that Die Hard is a Christmas movie, right?
I saw a clip of Bruce Willis saying it was not a Christmas movie.
What?
Bruce Willis said it was not.
Well, he's wrong.
Wait, so what if, okay, we all, I mean, clearly griped about the worst. Are there best? Do you have best Christmas songs? I mean,
we already said the Mariah Carey. All I Want for Christmas Is You. That's one. For me, it actually goes back, it's nostalgia. For me, it goes back to my childhood, my dad and my mom, but it was my dad's record. When we got up Christmas morning and we were, you know, called out of our bedrooms to come out and there was the flashing light from the 8mm, you know, film camera. He was playing Gene Autry's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Mm-hmm. So Gene Autry's Christmas album, to me, anytime I hear that, that's pure nostalgia. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is the purest Christmas music that exists.
Yeah.
My favorite's Frank Sinatra's Christmas album. And then I like James Taylor after that.
Oh, yeah. Good calls.
I was just talking with one of my photographers, like, how crazy is it that, like, Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra are still being played, Gene Autry, on the radio?
Yeah.
You think, like, it'd be wild for them to think, like, how many years later you're like, we're still relevant, right? You know, at least for Christmas.
Yeah, and there's still some of the best versions of those songs. Because, I mean, who did I hear doing one? And I'm like, what the heck? Like, I didn't know you did this. I don't know if it was, like, Kelly Clarkson or something, but, yeah, sometimes those originals are the best version.
Have you guys heard Sia's Christmas album?
No.
It's really good. It's not. It's all original, but it's awesome.
Well, you mentioned Mela Kalikimaka, Maka, right? the Hawaiian one. That just makes me think of the movie Christmas Vacation. Yeah. Which we just watched. Again, I watch it at least once every season, and it never disappoints.
No, do you have a favorite Christmas movie?
That's probably for me. That's probably my. I know a lot of people go to things like Elf or there's other things.
Mm-hmm.
I,
Love
me,
Actually.
Love. Okay.
It's controversial.
And then of course, you know, it's a Wonderful Life is obviously the old classic, but for me, it's or Miracle on is it 34th Street? I was 46th Street.
I love that one.
But for me, it's Christmas Vacation, and I could quote that all day long, and actually. I'm not going to quote it here for good reason, but the speech he gives when he finally just loses it.
Yeah.
And then he goes over and he has the eggnog and that speech. When it came on, my wife looked at me and she hit pause. She goes, "Do you want to just say it?"
Fast forward 10 seconds.
No. Play.
Mine is White Christmas.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. White Christmas.
Another classic.
My dad is like kind of, I don't know, when you see him and meet him, you might think he's like kind of like tough and serious or whatever, and he loves Christmas movies. So growing up as a kid, he was like all the classics, like in our house, like Christmas in Connecticut, like we're talking old Christmas movies, and I could quote those, but I feel like I can't watch a movie twice besides Christmas movies, like older ones.
Yeah,
I'm on this like
weird... any other time, like you won't go back and rewatch.
I'll never rewatch a movie.
Okay,
and unless then it like drains from my brain.
Yeah,
and I don't know what happened.
If that was the case, I wouldn't have watched Fletch 100 times. Really,
holy,
there's a bug right there.
Gosh.
Okay, it's just one of those like little. Is that what do you call
it?
Box elder bug. Box elder bug has joined us. Right here, I think it liked White Christmas as well. It wants to give us its favorite. So before it gets to the top of my mic, we're going to wrap this one up here and send you all on your merry way. If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record, an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, a favorite Christmas song or one you hate, or you want to tell us what you think of Box Elder Bugs, our buddy here, send your emails to fox6investigators@fox.com. Ashley, thanks for being on the podcast.
Woo.
It was too long. We'll have to have you on again soon. As always, thank you to the people
I thought you meant the podcast was too long today.
You need to really next time, like,
we'll fix it. Shut your mouth.
Too long of a wait to get her on.
Got it.
Clarify.
Got it.
As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including our executive producer Sarah Smith, our editor Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer manning the video switcher, Kale Zimney. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.